Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Be heard by calling 401-737-1287. Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI. Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI. We now return to Cordishy and Coit.
Welcome back to Cordishy and Coit on WEEI. He's Nick Coit. I'm Scott Cordishy. We have spent the better part of the last 90-plus minutes talking about the Patriots, and I'm okay with that. Because I'm like the rest of New England. Do you see the difference in the ratings between the Patriots preseason game and the Red Sox game on Thursday night?
Hopefully talking about the Red Sox doesn't get you called a Kardashian and me called a Kellerman. Holy cow.
I did hear Dale earlier this week, and I agreed with him on this, because I've been kind of feeling this way myself. When splitting up the blame pie for the 2019 Boston Red Sox and the disaster that this season has been so far, they're 15 games out of first place right now behind the Yankees. The division has long been over with. They are 5.5 games out of the second wild card spot, 9 out of the first wild card spot. They still have a shot to be a wild card team. You've got 44 games to go. You've got 44 games to go. I don't think they're going to do it. They've got two teams ahead of them in Tampa and Oakland. But
it's grim, but it's not over.
Yeah, it's not over with 44 games. They still get a shot. But if I'm splitting up the blame pie, I kind of agree with Dale on this. Dale said he puts about 65% of it on the players themselves for just not getting it done. Because, you know, outside of the fact that you didn't bring back, what, Kimbrel and Kelly, this was pretty much the same team that won 108 games last year. So I put 65% of it, like Dale, on guys like Sale, who until his start the other night, which was fabulous, has been awful. Price lately has been horrendous. Porcello all season long has been bad. In the first half before the All-Star break, Betts was way off of his MVP pace of a year ago. Benintendi's production was down. And even J.D. Martinez, who was great last year, was just very good. He wasn't at the level he was last year, right?
He's been spotty. He's just been kind of spotty.
Well, but in fairness to Martinez, Benintendi, Betts, right, they're turning on here, right?
Yes.
This last like 3-4 week stretch, these guys they're zoned in. But the point is, if you want to know why this team hasn't come close to what they did a year ago, I think it's because those players have just not lived up to expectation, right?
No, they haven't performed
well. I put a majority on them. I think Dale said next he'd go with Dave Dombrowski getting about 25%, which I agree is about a fair portion of blame pie to give him. And the biggest thing that I blame him for is the fact that he believed that the team could go into the season without a closer. That was his mistake. I know they're up against the salary, luxury tax, all that stuff. The bottom line is he needed to figure out a way to get it done. Because I have no problem not bringing back Kimbrel. Right? We see what he's done with the Cubs. I have no problem with him wanting to move on from Kimbrel, but to go into the season without a closer was a terrible mistake, because what it did was it elevated all the other guys in that bullpen to roles that they weren't capable of filling. It's the old Peter principle, right? You get elevated to your level of incompetence. And so by not having a closer, you didn't allow those guys to sit and flourish in the roles that they should have been in. I think another part of the bullpen's failure also has been the fact that the starters have been so damn bad that it's put undue pressure on the Red Sox bullpen.
Oh, the taxed. They're
but
taxed
I'll still put 25% on Dombrowski for not having a closer going into this season. And then 10% on Alex Cora, as we talked about at the beginning of this season. His approach to spring training was laissez-faire. We're going to take it easy on the guys. We had a long season last year that culminated in the World Championship in late October, and they clearly were not ready coming out of the gates. They were miserable in the month of April. Now, they should have since recovered from that, but I'll put maybe 10% of it on Alex Cora. So 65% players, 25% Dombrowski, 10% Cora. I'm good with those numbers.
I think that's pretty accurate. I'm going to call myself out here for something, Scott, that I said during spring training. I liked the rhetoric that Alex Cora had, and this is part of that 10% where he said, like, let's not, I can't remember what the exact quote was, but it was pretty much like, we're not closing the book on last year. We're just like continuing to write, you know, or continuing what we did last year, that sort of thing. I bought into that. I thought, you know, this is a talented team. It's pretty much the same team coming back, minus Kelly and Kimbrell. Like, I bought into that. I thought, you know, it's a pretty good message because they were so darn good last year that I thought, yeah, you should continue to do what you did because you were really, really good. Nope. I will never fall for that again. And it was a bad quote on Alex Cora's part. It's not a good message. And that message has led to the underperformance that you're seeing. Because the best thing that the Patriots do is, and the best thing that Bill Belichick does, we praise him all the time for it. It's a new year. And next year, the next season is a new season.
Bob Seger, baby. Turn the page.
You move on. And that's what the Patriots do better than anybody.
They do it from week to week. Forget about season to season.
Right. Week to week. You're absolutely right. And I think the Red Sox made the mistake of not turning the page and not turning the corner. And here they are. This is where they're at because of it. They eased their way into the season. They figured out you can't do that. And yeah, it has led to what you're seeing right now. As you said, the outlook is grim. They still have a shot here. I think Cleveland is now tied with Minnesota.
Isn't that amazing?
They're going to overtake the Central. They are. They're just
unbelievable.
They're the hottest team in baseball. They made a lot of deadline deals.
In early June, they were, I think, 11 or 11 and a half out of first place in the AL Central, and they are now tied with the Twins atop the division. So one of those teams right now is leading the wild card race. The other, the division.
And if the Twins continue to fade a little bit here, Rocco Baldelli's group, they're going to fall into the wild card. If they fall down a little bit, then that's another team that's the tough part about this wild card race is that the Sox are 5.5 behind of that second spot. And yeah, they have a 4-game series left with Tampa, which you're going to have to at least take 3 out of 4 of when you play them. But even if you were to do that, you're not going to see Oakland, and Oakland is a team that you're going to have to catch, too. I mean, there's multiple teams there that you're going to have to catch up to, and that's a difficult thing to do. So that's why the outlook is grim, but it's not over yet.
Yep.
It's not over yet, and you give them credit for playing the way they're playing right now and putting things together. Here's a question for you, Scott, with the Sox. And this has been brought up, I think, and it was pointed out that Dan Shaughnessy of the Globe had said something about this. Is Dave Dombrowski back next year?
I was surprised at Shaughnessy. I can understand how after a season of tremendous, I guess, underachievement, how somebody might have to pay the price. I don't know. I mean, I guess because I put so much of the blame on the players, I don't hold Dombrowski maybe as accountable as Dan Shaughnessy does. So I don't think he should lose his job, if you're asking me my question at the end of the season. I don't.
So, to me, it would be, if he was to not be back next year, it would be less about him losing his job over this season and more about what is the direction of the franchise moving forward. Because Dave Dombrowski is not a player development guy. He's not. And he was brought in to do a job, and that was to put together a World Series championship team. And he did that. He got the job done, and you give him credit for that.
Right.
But going forward, it would be more parting ways than it would be him losing his job over this season, because you need a direction where you have guys, and your major league club is going to stay competitive. You have guys that are signed up and are going to be here for a few years. You know, the Bogaerts deal we talked about, it looks fantastic right now. To me, you're going to have to now go in a direction where you make a decision on Mookie. What are you going to do with Mookie Betts? And then you go from there. If you trade Mookie, you replenish the farm system a little bit. You're going to have to develop more guys, your young talent, because you have veterans that are going to carry the major league roster and keep you competitive here for a few years down the road. Dave Dombrowski is not a player developer. He's not. And so that's why, to me, I think next year, I don't think he is back. But like I said, it's more, if you want language in a press release, it's going to say we're parting ways, not he's being fired or relieved of his duty.
That's semantics.
It is. But I'm saying that's the feel to it, you know. And on the outside, it's going to look like he lost his job after a bad season. But to me, it's less about that and more about the direction of the franchise.
It is amazing when you consider a team like the Tampa Bay Rays. Here's a team that has a payroll that's, I think, less than one-third of what the Red Sox is. Mm. Yet, last year they won 90 games in a division with the Red Sox and Yankees, and here they are again, right there knocking on the door for a postseason spot with that payroll. And they're a team that knows once a guy has finished his contract and he's about to hit his payday, they know they can't afford to keep him, so they trade him beforehand. They get assets in return. It's amazing they're able to do what they do, compete at the level that they compete at, given their payroll restrictions.
It's a tribute to their general manager and being able to work within his means to field a competitive ball club. And that's why every year that the Oakland A's are in contention, the guy that is still out there running the show is Billy Beane, and there's nobody better at it. And that guy, you give him a lot of credit because he has never been given more resources, ever, even with that freaking movie they made about him. Yep. They made a movie with Brad Pitt about him, and they still won't give him anything because that's just the franchise and their means. But every year they're competitive, and he's able to figure that out. You know, I wonder what Billy Beane would be like in a big market. And developing young talent and guys like that. I wonder if John Henry would make that call again. I wonder.
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know if he would leave at this point. He's so established there with Oakland. But that's an interesting. If there were the candidates to, you know, replace Dave Dombrowski, if that were to happen, that'd be an interesting one. That's a phone call I'd make. It'd be interesting.
You know, when you look at Major League Baseball as a whole, too, and you look at the upcoming postseason, it's almost hard to imagine a World Series that doesn't have Houston against the Dodgers. Right?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it's almost hard to envision anything other than that. And I know we just talked about Cleveland's catching fire right now, but you look at that starting rotation of the Astros, and it's not just that. I mean, they're a great defensive team. They can hit the baseball. I just don't see how in a playoff series you can beat the starters that they're going to throw out at you. And all due respect to the season the Yankees have had, I just don't see how. And Houston's not the AL representative, and LA's not the NL representative.
Cleveland may get better here, too. Kluber's on his way back out of the minor leagues. He's throwing rehab starts right now.
Yeah.
If that guy were to come in as, like, that's like a September acquisition for them, that kind of guy. Like, holy cow, if you could use him in any scenario in the postseason, that's huge. And Cleveland, just, you give them credit for all the deals they made, too. They reworked the team. They gave up Bauer. They bring in Puig, and they've just continued to go on this path. But we know what they have in the dugout as their manager. The guy is who he is. Terry Francona is Terry Francona, man. He is a great manager, and that's why you have somebody like that.
Right.
You're going to have that kind of success and stay afloat. You know, guys buy into that. So,
what are your expectations, circling back to the Patriots here to wrap things up these last 5 minutes?
Yep.
What do you think we're going to see?
9 minutes, Scott. Don't look at the clock up on the wall.
I'm sorry. You're right. I am. I'm looking at it says 10 of.
Yes, it is.
I got out early last week because the clock fooled me. I need to look at my watch. I have the correct time here. You're right. The last 9 minutes.
Last week, Scott ended the show, and he's wrapping it up, and I look at my watch. I'm like, oh. Well, Scott must have somewhere to be, because I'm like, wow, we're ending really early. It's very nice of him to give some more time to Mark and Kitchen coming up at 9 a.m. Like, that's really nice. And he's like, oh, I was looking at the clock. Like, oh, I'm sorry. He said, don't look at the clock on the wall, Scott.
Last time I took that thing down, like daylight savings time, and you know, like turned it back or up an hour, like I couldn't get it back up because the screw was like just put into drywall and it's like all stripped and falling down. I had to like rest it against the
window.
He's
on one of the rolling chairs here in the studio, too. That was that was fun. Hold the
it
chair,
it was almost
Coy.
A TLC match.
Yeah, honestly.
That has disaster written all over it.
Yeah.
What do you expect preseason game number two? For instance, do you think we'll see Tom Brady
and most
of the starters?
Yeah, I think we'll see Brady
for a limited time.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, obviously, you know, game number three is the game where that's the dress rehearsal, and so we'll see that in Foxborough. But yeah, I think you'll see a little bit of Brady. I'd hope you would. I don't think you're going to see Edelman at all during the preseason. I don't. I just think they're going to be cautious with him. When no matter what's going on with the thumb, he'll get out on the practice field. He's a veteran guy. They'll put him in glass, and then they'll break the glass week one. So I don't think you're going to see him. Same with maybe Sony Michel. You know, if he's dealing with the issue that he's been dealing with, you know, there's certain guys I don't think you're going to see during the preseason, and they're okay with that because I think there's guys that are okay. But I think the rookies, the more time they can get out there, the better. The more N'Keal Harry can get out there and play. I know he kind of hobbled off in preseason game number one, but the more he can get out there and play, the better. You know, I think these guys need to get used to the pacing and the speed of the game and work on certain things. And so all the rookies are going to play. And I don't know. I'd like to be nice to see the full-on defense at some point, too.
So I was you know, kind of going around the internet, the NFL Network, and checking out box scores online. And my take from the first week of preseason games, I think a lot of teams, it's amazing how over the years preseason football has been de-emphasized, the importance of these games. Not that they ever were very important, but I mean, to the point where it's like, it's more important to rest our starters and not put them in harm's way than it is to even put them out there for a series or two. But for those that did play some guys that will be starters, let's take the New York teams. Sam Darnold looked good in his drive for the Jets, as did rookie Daniel Jones for the New York Giants. I know it's early. Baker Mayfield looked great moving Baker the Browns down the field.
Yeah.
Right? You know, just some of the things that you know, I was kind of looking around the league saying, okay, who's playing, who's not, you know, and of teams that are playing starters, how do they look? And, you know, there's a few things I looked at, and Mayfield stuck out to me the most.
Yeah.
That's a team that's going to be a trendy team. And they're coming to Foxborough this year, by the way.
I know. It's going to be a good game. It's going to be a good game. That's a contender in the AFC for sure. And so to see him playing well and doing well, that's, certainly gets your antenna up for sure. There's something else, Scott, and I know we've got 5 minutes left in the show. So, you know what, I'll end on this because this is something I wanted to bring up at some point. So I have a lot of people that, from back home in Plymouth, Mass, that listen to the show, and I appreciate that a lot. And the Plymouth community this week, you know, we've all had coaches, you know, in our local communities that were, you know, big parts of our upbringing and have, you know, touched the lives of thousands of kids and have, you know, just been a pillar in the community. And the Plymouth community lost a guy this week, Coach Paul Coffin. He was a longtime gym teacher at one of the elementary schools. He coached boys basketball. He coached girls basketball. He coached the freshman baseball team. I only had him for one season on the freshman baseball team. And we all have those coaches where they stick out to you and they influence you. And, you know, like I said, I only had Coach Coffin for one season, but there were a lot of, you know, messages and Facebook posts and things like that this week. And, you know, I just wanted to, you know, send my condolences to his family. He was a wonderful, wonderful guy. I have really fond memories. He was such a great coach because he just was one of those that was like, okay, you guys are good. You guys know what you're doing. Go out, have fun, and just play well. That's it. He didn't win or lose, whatever. Whatever. You wanted to win, but like, he just, and I think it took a lot of pressure off kids and, you know, even being a gym teacher in elementary school like that, you know, you influence so many kids, so many lives in a community. It's one of those that I know the services are this week and I just know it's going to be out the door because he knew so many people in the community. And
sure.
I think we all have people that we think
absolutely.
Of like that, you know?
Absolutely.
And so I send my condolences to his family because he was just such a great guy. I always have fond memories too of, so my dad, I grew up in the Catholic Church. My dad and I would go to the very early Mass at St. Peter's Parish in Plymouth every Sunday. And, you know, 7:30 in the morning. But we'd go in, get out, get the communion.
7:30 Mass?
7:30 Mass.
Wow.
Oh, he got me early. But it was nice. It was easy. It wasn't a lot of people. The communion line was very fast. You know, you get your communion, you say your prayers, and you're out of there. And so my dad and I would get the communion, and then we go back to the back of the church and be ready to go out the door. We were ready. We were ready to go, you know, final prayers, whatever. And always standing in the corner every Sunday, and we shook his hand every Sunday, was Coach Coffin. He was right there. Every Sunday I'd see him. And this was after I played for him, too. So, and it's just one of those people that, like, he's part of the upbringing, and he continues to be a supporter down the road, too. So, just condolences to his family because he was just a wonderful man.
Yep, well said. I agree. We've all had people in our lives like that, you know, coaches, you know, like you said, teachers that have made an impact on us as youth and Yeah. Well said, Mr.
Thanks.
Coit.
Thanks.
Let's wrap it up with James in Norwich. James, you've got the final word this morning on Cordishi and Coit on WEEI.
All right. There's my favorite pair.
Hi, James.
All right. Even more popular than Abbott and Costello.
All right. What you got?
I just wanted to say, you know, I just wanted to check in, and I think I missed you guys last week, and I just wanted to say hi, and I want you guys to have a good day.
Well, thanks,
wow,
James.
That's
very nice. Yeah, that's very nice.
Perfect. You too, James.
Yeah, thanks, James.
I just woke up. I'm taking my daughter to the zoo. I got a 6-year-old daughter, and first time she's going to go to the zoo. And I said, oh, no. I said, it's already almost 9 o'clock, and I didn't get to check in with you guys. So you guys have a wonderful day, and I will talk to you longer next week.
All right. Thank you,
thanks, James.
Appreciate it.
Enjoy the zoo. That's
taking
awesome.
It down to the zoo. I remember those days. My kids are a little bit past that now. They're teenagers, but I remember going to the Roger Williams.
That's great.
Park Zoo.
Oh, yeah. My grandparents took me once. Yeah, they did. And keeps the kids busy running around, and then they tire out. It's great. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
That must have polar bear exhibit.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I don't think I ever saw it.
I went to a really cool zoo in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. Liked it. Nice. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. It's my zoo story for the day.
Thanks. All right, Scott, you can wrap up the show
now. I can wrap
up.
Yeah, we're pretty much done. Stretching it out there at the end.
Got to close strong, boys.
We will be back together next Saturday, and then I'm going to be off for a couple of weeks, Coity. You're going to be on your own. Well, not on your own.
Oh, great. Yeah, that's nice. Thanks.
You'll have co-hosts with you, in fact.
Yeah.
You'll have Mark, and you'll have Kitchen.
Both of them.
There you go.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Speaking of Mark and Kitchen, they're coming up next here on WEEI. Thanks to Joe Passarelli. Great job on the other side of the glass. Laura Minicucci for putting this thing together during the week. For Nick Coit, I am Scott Cradishy. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI. This is Cradishy and Coit.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.